about you, but in my household, I always filter my drinking water through a Brita and boil it before I consume it. Even though I live in a place where the water quality is one of the best in the world, it's always nice to take small precautions to ensure what you eat and drink is as clean as possible. Now, you may be wondering why I'm discussing water hygiene here, but that is because it is the main vector of the disease we will be talking about today. Nowadays, if we eat contaminated food or drink contaminated water, we may get diseases such as norovirus, salmonella, and dysentery. Luckily, these diseases are easily curable thanks to modern medicine. However, in the past, there was one waterborne disease that trumped all in terms of casualties: cholera. Due to poor sanitation, cholera became one of the most common diseases in the 19th and 20th centuries. Because it was spread through contaminated water, it was difficult to catch and isolate. In fact, cholera is responsible for not one, not two, not three, but seven separate pandemics within the span of 150 years. Welcome to A History of Pandemics. I'm Megan, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we delve into some of history's most devastating epidemics and pandemics. This is part one of a two-part series on the seven cholera pandemics, which were one of the largest public health crises in the 19th and 20th centuries. There were three major pandemics within the span of 60 years, and the next four pandemics lasted from the late 19th century to the 1970s. The cholera pandemics were also significant because it marked a major disease outbreak in which the primary vector was one's environment, rather than transmitting the disease through direct contact. On this episode, we will take a look at the first three cholera pandemics, and the next episode, we will examine the next four cholera pandemics. You can find all episodes of the podcast for free on Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. To listen to A History of Pandemics, just click on the app and type in A History of Pandemics in the search bar. And now, back to the episode. Before we dive into the epidemiology of cholera, we should first shine a light on the pathogen that causes this disease. Cholera is caused by Vibrio cholerae, a type of bacteria. Vibrio cholerae is a facultative anaerobe, which means that it can survive with or without oxygen. In addition, Vibrio cholerae is a gram-negative bacteria, which makes them more resistant compared to other bacteria due to their stronger cell wall. One thing to note is that there are actually many serogroups or variations of the bacteria, but only two serogroups cause cholera. These two groups are called O1 and O39. The O1 serogroup is responsible for the majority of cholera outbreaks, while O39 is only confined to Southeast Asia and was not identified until 1991, long after the seven cholera pandemics have ended. Vibrio cholerae likes to live in slightly salty water, such as brackish waters and estuaries. This makes cholera one of the most notable waterborne diseases. Thus, the most common way to contract cholera is by consuming unclean water. When the bacteria enters a host, it releases a toxin, aptly known as the cholera toxin. This poison attacks the mucosal lining of the intestine, which creates cholera symptoms. Most patients diagnosed with cholera have minimal, if any, symptoms. This happens in around 80% of cases. However, for the other 20%, severe cholera symptoms can lead to death if untreated. The most common symptom of cholera is diarrhea, which is because of the cholera toxin that affects the intestine's ability to reabsorb water. In fact, cholera is actually named after the Greek word cholera, spelled with a K, which means diarrhea. In severe diarrhea cases, cholera victims can lose up to 1 liter of fluid per hour. The diarrhea is sometimes called rice water stool because of its resemblance to rice water with flecks of mucus and cells. If a large amount of fluid is lost due to diarrhea, the patient may enter a state of shock because of an imbalance of electrolytes. Fluid loss also causes the blood to thicken and darken, making patients look blue before dying. Patients may also experience painful muscle cramps and spasms. Other symptoms include seizures, heart rhythm abnormality, low blood pressure, and a loss of skin elasticity. If treated, cholera is a very curable disease. The most crucial aspect of cholera treatment is to replace lost fluids and electrolytes. In modern medicine, this is often done with an oral rehydration solution, also known as ORS. Additionally, fluids and electrolytes may be given intravenously. In more severe cases, antibiotics such as tetracycline and ampicillin can also be administered. Zinc may also be given to children under 5 as a form of treatment. Even though records of cholera-like symptoms have been present since as far back as 2,500 years ago, it was not until the 19th century that major outbreaks of cholera occurred. This could be because in the 1800s, there was a surge in urbanization, which meant the population density of cities was larger than ever before. With more people sharing potentially contaminated food and water supplies, this made diseases like cholera very easy to spread. The first cholera pandemic began in 1817 and ended in 1824. The outbreak began in Jessore, a city in India between Calcutta and Dhaka. In fact, most of the cholera pandemics we will cover do originate in India. This could be because the climate in India is quite warm and humid, which is perfect for Vibrio cholerae. In addition, research has found that cholera may be endemic or originate from the Ganges River Delta in India. Some epidemiologists and medical historians believe that the cholera spread throughout India via a Hindu pilgrimage called the Kumbhmela. On the other hand, other historians believe that the disease was spread through contaminated rice. Cholera then traveled throughout Asia and the Middle East through military and trade routes established by European colonizers. For example, merchant ships traveling throughout the Indian Ocean would often bring the disease with them. Another illustration of this is the transmission of cholera from the troops involved in the Ottoman-Persian War of 1820. In addition, British troops, who were trying to take over the world at this point, spread cholera to Oman in 1821. By this time, virtually every country in Asia was affected by the pandemic. In Indonesia, over 100,000 people died from the disease on the island of Java alone. In Bangkok, Thailand, there were an estimated 30,000 casualties. Besides ravaging Asia, cholera actually spread as far north as Russia as well. In particular, the city of Astrakhan was heavily affected by the disease. Being the first European country to succumb to cholera, Russia made an anti-cholera medical program in October of 1823. According to R.E. McGrew, this was thanks to the efforts of a German physician, Dr. Riemann, who worked under the Russian government. Dr. Riemann convinced the Minister of the Interior and the Council of Ministers that cholera was an incredibly dangerous disease, and that Russia and the rest of Europe would be heavily impacted if no decisive plan was made to contain the disease. With Tsar Alexander I's approval, the Special Anti-Cholera Committee was formed. This medical council was arguably the first program of its kind. In later cholera pandemics, other European governments would model their medical councils after the Russian example. As we will see later, Europe needed all the help they could get to combat the disease. The first cholera pandemic ended in 1824. Historians believe that the winter of 1823 to 1824 was particularly cold. Thus, the low temperatures may have killed most of the Vibrio cholerae in countries' water supplies. Unfortunately, just a few years later, the second cholera pandemic would emerge. The second cholera pandemic began in 1829 and roughly ended in around 1849. This pandemic is rather significant because this is the first cholera pandemic that reached Western Europe and even the Americas. Like the first cholera pandemic, this one started in the Ganges River Delta as well. And once again, cholera spread swiftly throughout the continent through the ever-growing network of European trading routes. In 1829, cholera spread to the Ural Mountains, which borders Russia in the southwest. There, the first documented Russian cholera case by the second pandemic was recorded on 26th August 1829 in the city of Orenburg. By 1830, cholera reached Moscow. 1 year later, cholera began its expansion westward by the Poland-Russian War, which exposed Central and Eastern Europe to the disease. That same year, in 1831, cholera reached the British Isles. Outbreaks first began in the port city of Sunderland and reached London a year later. In 1832, cholera reached North America, most likely by immigrant ships from Europe. In June of that year, Quebec experiences an outbreak of cholera, which led to 1,000 deaths. The disease then continued to spread throughout the continent via the St. Lawrence River. In 1833, cholera traveled as far south as Mexico and Cuba. Even though cholera outbreaks had been occurring for some time at this point, no one really understood how the disease was spread, never mind how to cure it. The British government believed in the theory of miasma, which was a concept that disease spread through bad air. Thus, cholera victims would not be allowed to burn any of their belongings. They, instead, were advised to boil their clothing and furniture in lye. Others simply didn't realize how severe the consequences of cholera were. In Paris, carnivals were held where cholera victims would dress in costume and act as revelers. Spectators found their clothing and blue makeup fascinating and entertaining. Unfortunately, the so-called makeup was actually their real skin. The skin turned blue because of the severe fluid loss and their congealing blood. No one thought much of it, though, until the revelers began dying in the streets. When preventative measures such as quarantining, restricting travel, and military enforcement were established, cholera riots began to occur. This first began in Russia, where people were protesting the actions of the anti-cholera committee that was created in the first cholera pandemic. The peasants also believed they were purposely contaminated with cholera by members of higher social standing, and they would break into police stations and hospitals. In June of 1831, there was a protest on the Sinaia Square in St. Petersburg, but the rioters were quickly dispatched by the army through the use of heavy artillery. Additional riots also occurred in the cities of Sevastopol and Novgorod. Cholera riots occurred in Great Britain as well. In the city of Aberdeen, two-thirds of the city's population rose up against the local medical establishment, as the citizens believed the cholera outbreak was an opportunity for hospitals to snatch bodies for medical purposes such as dissections. To be fair, the city was in great fear of body snatching, that was also called burking, due to the Burke and Hare body snatching murders in 1828. More protests continued throughout the British Isles, adding up to a whopping 72 riots, most of which were targeted at medical authorities and body snatchers. In particular, Liverpool experienced the greatest frequency of riots, with 8 occurring between May and June of 1832. All that being said, the worst was yet to come. In 1852, the third cholera pandemic emerged, and the disease struck again with a vengeance. The third cholera pandemic lasted from 1852 to 1859. This was the deadliest cholera pandemic out of the 7, and it was also the deadliest disease outbreak in the 19th century as a whole. Can you now guess where it began? Yes, it did start in India again. Cholera struck in Asia, North America, South America, Europe, and Africa. Africa was hit especially hard, as the disease traveled along the east coast from Ethiopia to Uganda. Europe was not doing much better. Irish peasants who were still recuperating from the effects of the potato famine succumbed to the disease, as they were very weak with starvation. In addition, 1854 was the worst year of cholera. 23,000 people in Britain alone died of the disease that year. That being said, the situation and impact of the third cholera pandemic was rather similar to that of the second cholera pandemic. Thus, instead of repeating myself, let's take a look at one incident during the third pandemic that revolutionized public health. I am, of course, talking about John Snow and the Broad Street cholera outbreak. As mentioned earlier, 1854 was a particularly devastating year for Great Britain. Out of the 23,000 casualties due to cholera, around 11,000 of them were in London alone. In particular, the Soho district of London was struck particularly hard by the outbreak. Soho was a poor area in London and had terrible sanitation. The London sewer system did not reach Soho, so people had to use rather primitive methods of disposing waste, such as dumping through windows and into the streets or river. In August of 1854, a fierce outbreak of cholera began in Soho. Within the first 3 days of the outbreak, 127 people had died. In total, 616 people in Soho would succumb to the disease. However, people were still unsure of how cholera was transmitted. John Snow was a physician in London and was particularly interested in the cholera outbreaks occurring there. He did not believe in the prevailing miasma theory and sought to find a way to disprove it. Snow did suspect the water supply and thus devised a case study to confirm his hypothesis. Snow used a dot map to mark out the locations of the victims' houses in the Soho district. Upon examination, he noticed that the majority of cases were centered around a water pump on Broad Street. In Snow's words, quote, "On proceeding to the spot, I found that nearly all the deaths had taken place within a short distance of the Broad Street pump. There were only 10 deaths in houses situated decidedly nearer to another street pump. In 5 of these cases, the families of the deceased persons informed me that they always sent to the pump in Broad Street, as they preferred the water to that of the pumps which were nearer. In 3 other cases, the deceased were children who went to school near the pump in Broad Street." End quote. As part of his experiment, Snow convinced the local authorities to remove the pump. To his relief, cholera cases significantly diminished after the pump's removal. Thus, it was confirmed that cholera was spread through contaminated water and the miasma theory was dissolved. It was later discovered that the well was near a cesspit that leaked fecal bacteria into the water supply. On top of that, the water in the well was supplied from the River Thames, but without filtration. Snow's investigation into the Broad Street cholera outbreak was a major success in the public health field. After the third cholera pandemic, steps were taken to ensure a greater focus on sanitation in Great Britain and in Western Europe as a whole. New sanitation facilities were constructed to ensure outbreaks like the Broad Street one would not occur again. Due to these improvements, Western Europe was largely unaffected by the four later cholera pandemics. Unfortunately, the rest of the world was still languishing behind in terms of sanitation practices, and more cholera outbreaks continued over the next 100 years. Thank you for listening to A History of Pandemics. Next episode, we will dissect the next four cholera pandemics. All episodes of A History of Pandemics are available for free on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. You can stream the podcast on your computer, phone, tablet, or any other electronic device wherever you are. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow the podcast on Spotify and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. See you next time.